They are getting their hands on all of our stuff, and they are stealing it right from the trains.
Oh, anything from test kits for COVID to furniture, tires, bicycles, TVs.
But that's not all. It turns out some of those crooks made off with things that cops really, really need to get back before they end up in your town. Also tonight, New York mourns two of its finest, with tears for the fallen and anger now aimed at one key official. And now the governor's weighing in. Plus, the big game is just around the corner, but many of us come for the halftime show. So you think a TV production that rakes in close to $500 million could at least pay the performers? And you'd be wrong. Tonight, meet the woman who says it is a major payment malfunction. And then the Janet Jackson nobody knows. Tonight, I'll talk to her longtime friend and stylist, the man behind that infamous Super Bowl outfit. Was it really a wardrobe malfunction, a stunt gone wrong, or was it something else entirely? And finally, can't say goodbye to Fido? Well, you don't have to. Why cloning pets is a thing and how it can make you millions. It's all ahead on Banfield. We begin tonight with breaking news. Police in Houston have arrested the suspected shooter of three Houston police officers from this afternoon. All of this trouble began about 7 hours ago when officers showed up to what was deemed a family disturbance, and the suspect, identified as Roland Caballero, a career criminal, began to lead them on a chase. Police say he crashed his car, and when the police got out of their car, he opened fire on them, hitting one of them, an officer, in the leg, another officer in the foot, another officer in the arm. Thank God all are expected to recover. The gunman then carjacked another vehicle and led the police again on another chase, this one ending in a standoff with the suspect barricaded inside a home and firing at the police through the windows. The police, of course, returned fire. It is not clear at this time whether Caballero was hit, but all of this caps off just a horrible week for Houston law enforcement. Just days ago, a Harris County constable was shot and killed at a traffic stop. We're going to keep our eye on this story tonight as it's fast moving. The governor weighing in on this too. We're going to keep you posted on all of the developments. But then we also have an alarming update to an appalling story in Los Angeles. If you saw the pictures of this Union Pacific rail yard, we showed you this last night, plundered and ransacked, a total wasteland that California's own governor compares to a third world country. I know you won't soon forget these pictures because, I mean, look at them. These packages and boxes used to contain pretty much anything you can think of en route to just about everywhere in the country.
They jump on these trains, these locks that these containers have are really, sometimes they're plastic seals. You know, the locks aren't really strong, you know. They don't care if the train's moving or not. They jump on the trains, pop the lock, and just start grabbing whatever they see.
All right, so now here's the alarming part. Thieves aren't just making off with clothes or electronics or medicine or whatever you just ordered from Amazon. They're also finding and they're taking guns. This week, Los Angeles's police chief revealed, and I quote, "People were breaking into these containers and stealing firearms, tens of them, tens of firearms that gave us great concern as a source of further violence in the city." Police also say that numerous guns have been recovered, but there are no hard numbers on just how many have been thieved from the railroad or how many are still out there. How did it come to be open season on freight trains that are bursting with valuable but also dangerous cargo. And if you don't live near Los Angeles and you don't think it's your problem and you don't think this DA Gascon is a problem, well, guess what? Those guns don't just stay in Los Angeles. Union Pacific is blaming this guy, the Los Angeles DA, George Gascon. George Gascon is blaming Union Pacific. And while they go back and forth, you and I just kind of have to hope that those stolen guns don't end up in our town. So let me take you from one side of the country to the other side of the country, LA to New York. Grief and discontent, with police at the center of the grief. And discontent, again, squarely aimed at a DA. Today, the famous St. Patrick's Cathedral in Manhattan. These were the images, a wake being held for a 22-year-old, I like to say kid, but it was Jason Rivera. He was one of two young NYPD officers who were gunned down, killed in cold blood in Harlem when the shootout began on Friday. Rivera and 27-year-old Wilbert Mora, Mora who fought for his life all week but then lost that battle on Tuesday, these are the two first NYPD officers shot to death in the line of duty since 2017. And their deaths have underscored an almost two-year surge in gun violence, not confined to New York, but also a total feeling of helplessness and lawlessness in America's biggest city. It's epitomized in the video that we brought you last night of a bunch of shoplifters just walking in and taking whatever they damn well feel like off the drugstore shelves in full view of everybody. Stores are closing because of it by the dozen. City leaders have to answer for it all. And particularly, it falls on this man, Manhattan's DA, the guy named Alvin Bragg, on the job not even a month. Bragg won election in large part promising not to throw the book at certain times of offenders and certain offenses and in certain circumstances. And now it seems DA Bragg might actually be changing his tune. Well, surprising how the stats can catch up with you. Tomorrow, the same day as Officer Rivera's funeral, DA Bragg is reportedly set to meet face-to-face with the big tuna, New York's governor, Kathy Hochul. Apparently, Kathy Hochul made the request, and she told the New York Post that she knows, quote, full well she can fire Bragg if it comes to that. Apparently, she's not there yet to be a fly on the wall, right, of that meeting. So I'm going to pause for a minute, and I want to bring in my first guest tonight, Michael Daly. He is a special correspondent for the Daily Beast. He is a former columnist for the New York Daily News, and he's author of the brand new book, New York's Finest, the greatest cop story ever told. And if you ever lived in New York, or if you even just passed through, chances are you have seen his byline or you have read his Big Apple opinions. Michael, it's good to see you. Thank you for coming on the show. And can I just, you know, right out of the gate, you know, give you my condolences on the week that you and your city are going through with these two officers. I can only imagine what it's like. Someone like you, who that's your beat, right? That's what you do. You just did cops. How are you processing?
Well, I mainly just did cops because when I started in this, there were 2,000 murders a year, more than 2,000 murders a year in New York. And then the police reduced it to less than 300 a year. And a lot of good cops got hurt doing that. Almost nobody thanked them. Now it's creeping back up, and it's terrible to see these two young cops. And, you know, there was a third cop who, and it wasn't really a shootout, it was an assassination. I mean, they were walking down a hall, and this guy came out and just murdered both of them. And there was a third cop who was in talking to the mother. His impulse was to push the mother to safety, and then he took on this guy. And the cop that did that, he's only been a cop since October. That's what he spent his career as a police officer. His two partners are murdered, and he stands up to this guy. He pushes someone to safety and then stands up to this guy and stops it.
3 months on the job. You know, New York is it's a tough lot, but I'll tell you something. I lived there for a couple decades, and there is really something when an officer dies and is mourned and remembered, especially at a place like St. Patrick's. Just, you know, take us there for a second and let us know what happens to the heart of New York when something like this happens.
Well, you know, it's St. Patrick's is at the heart of the city. And when that happens, the whole city goes still. I mean, all of Fifth Avenue is empty. You get thousands of police officers in white gloves standing at attention. And they salute, and their comrade is brought past them, and they go in, and the ones that can fit in the cathedral go in, the others stay out in the street. And then when the funeral is over, they all fall into formation again, and they again salute. There's a helicopter fly over, and it's singular, but it also reminds you of all the other ones you've been to at this. I mean, just last week, there was a memorial. There was a police officer, Stephen McDonald, from 1986. He was 28. He just newly married. His wife was 2 months pregnant, and he was shot and paralyzed in Central Park in the middle of the day by a 15-year-old kid. And at his kid's christening, Stephen said, "My badge is a badge of compassion, and I forgive the young man who shot me with the hope he'd go on and do something with his life."
Wow.
And he died 5 years ago after being on a ventilator for 31 years, preaching forgiveness. And his message was love, not hate, love. And they had his memorial last week. And the kid who's christening, who was christened when his father forgave the shooter, is now a police lieutenant. And he spoke on behalf of his father. But one thing to remember about, I mean, after they saved the city, along the way there were some problems, and CompStat, which was one of the main mechanisms, got taken over. It got turned into a, they forgot what the purpose of it was, and there was too many stop and frisks, and there were some bad feelings, and then George Floyd got killed, and there were riots, and that son ended up suffering a concussion in the riot. When something like this happens and you see everybody expressing grief for the police officers, you share that grief, but you also wonder, where are they during the rest of the time? And these cops are out there risking the same thing.
Hey, Michael, can I ask you a question? Listen, while we were coming to air with you, and, you know, clearly the wake in the center of Manhattan today was big on everyone's mind, the situation, you know, broke in Houston, and now three officers have been shot. Thank God they're okay, but one of their colleagues died earlier this week. I just want to read you real quickly something that came in just in the last little bit from the governor of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott. In part, his statement says, "Violence against the police will never be tolerated in the Lone Star State. The state of Texas will ensure that the city of Houston and the Houston Police Department have the resources and support they need to ensure swift justice for the perpetrator." I want to ask you a little bit about what that might mean in New York, because it's getting ugly. The politics against the DA, the governor saying, "I want a meeting." And now, you know, you got a new mayor and he talks tough and he's a former cop, Eric Adams. What do you see for this city as it's fallen into the toilet in the last 2 years? Drug addicts all over the street, muggings all over New York City, and officers now five, I think, shot just this year, and we're only in January.
We're going to be all right. We're not going in the toilet. If you think of that third cop standing up to that guy, he's only been a cop for 3 months doing that. That's the city of New York. And, you know, we've taken a couple of hits lately, and we've fallen back. But, you know, we're going to take care of this. I mean, everybody says, you can't do anything about gun violence. New York City did do something about gun violence. We reduced gun violence down to almost nothing. And that guy in Texas, I mean, if he's talking about justice and all that, well, it's a little late for that cop that got killed. I mean, what you want to do is you want to keep the guns out of the hands of the bad guys, and you want to keep the guns out of the street. And that means you don't just open up gun stores everywhere. The city of New York, they take thousands of illegal guns off the street, and the guns keep coming in from places like Texas. Excuse me, I get a little nuts about
that. Hey, Michael, I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you. I've been a big fan of yours for a long time, and I've been reading your columns since I started to read. So thank you, and our heart goes out to you and your fellow New Yorkers.
It's a good city. It really is. It's a great city.
It is. It's good people, too. Yeah. Thank you. Michael Daly joining us now with the Daily Beast. I encourage you to check out his columns. They are powerful. You know, if there is one thing that just still brings us together, it's the Super Bowl, right? Doesn't matter where you're from. We all like it. We all watch it. And it is coming, thank God, in just over 2 weeks. But whether it's the Chiefs or the Bengals or the 49ers or the Rams, there is one winner already guaranteed. Know who it is? It's the NFL. Oh, man. Last year, Super Bowl advertising alone brought in almost $500 million. And that's a good thing because the NFL has some really hefty bills to pay, like the NFL commissioner, who makes $63 million a year. And the average salary for a player is about $2 million a year. The general manager, the average one, gets about $2 million as well. And the league minimum for a player is $660,000 a year. Don't even get me started on what they pay for the halftime show. Some reports say the NFL shells out up to $10 million for the entertainment. And who would blame them, right? Past few years, megawatt stars like Lady Gaga and The Weeknd have graced the stage. Now, this year, it's going to be Eminem and Dr. Dre and Mary J. Blige and Kendrick Lamar. They're all awesome, and it's going to be dino, right? However, you know all those extras? They kind of look like fans. Look at them all. Woo! They look like concert fans with lights. They are actually dancers and entertainers who put in 9 days of tough rehearsals so that everything goes just right for the NFL. And they get nothing. Zero. No pay. Nothing. Taja Riley is a dance artist and activist, and she says she's had enough. She's got 100,000 Instagram followers and said somebody has to speak up for these unpaid dancers. She has danced alongside Janet Jackson and Beyonce and Nicki Minaj and Rihanna, but she is alongside us tonight. So, Taj, thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate it. First of all, why aren't they paid?
Thank you. Okay, so just to set the record straight, there are paid performers. There's also unpaid performers. I learned just recently, because I've done two Super Bowls myself. I've done one for J-Lo and Shakira that happened 2 years ago. And then I also did the Super Bowl performance that took place with Beyonce and Coldplay and Bruno Mars. So I've experienced the Super Bowl where I was being paid, but I will say low-key that the Super Bowl is actually one of the lowest paying union gigs that there is to date, which is crazy because it's one of the most profitable events of the world, one of the most profitable sporting events in the world. So, yeah, and I'm very shocked. I'm really glad you gave me the statistics because I had no idea about some of the stammering amounts of salary and income and commissions that, like, are awarded to people in the NFL Association. So it just, like, adds more fuel to the fire of the fact of, you know, outside of these paid performers, even if they're low-balled or low-value pay, there are also other people that they hire or recruit as volunteers. And those people are usually asked to volunteer for free. Sometimes they've included parking, or sometimes they've included, like, you get a hat, or sometimes they've included you maybe get a sweater.
Free parking?
It's giving free food. Maybe free food, maybe crafty. But for this specific Super Bowl, just like other past Super Bowls, they are asking to recruit these volunteers and having them there for 9 days of rehearsal and showtime. And then 8 to 10 hours on average per day okay? They have to pay their own parking. They have to pay their own transportation. Let's not forget about Uber does a surge. Lyft does a surge, you know, leading up to the Super Bowl because they know that a lot of people are going to be ponying up to go to SoFi Stadium, right? So you have to pay for your parking. You have to pay for your transport. You have to pay for your food. You cannot bring social media, which is like, this is supposed to be an offer for exposure, and you're not getting exposure. You're kind of getting
I think that might be the biggest rub of all, Tasha. If you're not allowed to, you know, put it on the gram that you're in there. One quick question
you
here.
You can't even put it on the gram. Like,
right. So the big artists like Lady Gaga, they don't get paid either, which I had no idea. I thought they raked in millions. But as it turns out, I looked at some of their stats after they perform, and like Gaga's sales and streams increased 1,000% the next day. So they may not get paid by the NFL, but they get a huge wallop, you know, afterwards, you know, in benefit. And you know, the dancers who you barely ever see, they can't even Instagram it. So they really don't get any benefit. Are you going to prevail, do you think, in the effort to persuade the NFL? Come on, you know, something for the effort.
I mean, it's great to just even get the name of dance artists out there and just the general exposure. I can't believe I'm saying this, but the general exposure of what's super problematic and actually happens to be a global problem. It's a global issue, the way people mistreat dance artists. And so I think it's also a blessing in disguise, and I don't want to like give Super Bowl the credit, but it takes something like the Super Bowl of this nature. Like, we're seeing how much heat this is getting and how much weight this is carrying, you know, for a lot of dance artists that are really hoping that people can understand just a portion of some of the disrespect or some of the mistreatment, some of the lack of equity opportunity and unethical practices that go on behind the scenes that you don't see. Yeah,
I was quoting all those salaries before, right? $63 million for the commissioner. I get it. He's a big deal. $2 million for the players, $2 million for the general manager, $660,000 as the league minimum. What, if in your fair assumption, and I don't mean to make you do math on the spot, but what would be fair pay for these dancers who gave 9 days and, you know, did this job? And I think the choreographer says all they need to know is how to chew gum and walk. That's probably a bit, you know, derogatory. But what would be fair pay for them?
Not true. That's not true, just according to past Super Bowls. But to answer your question about fair pay, what would be fair pay? I think, to be honest, because this is one of the most profitable sporting events, dance artists should look forward to, they already do, in the case of being engaged in an opportunity this large, this big, for the world, they already look at this as like one of the heights of their career, one of the peaks of their career. So I feel like it's only appropriate for the rate and the fees to match up. Usage, being able to be included in all the usage platforms that they use, all of these commercial ad runs. If we had a piece of that, in addition to our rehearsals, in addition to the show, parking being paid, transportation being paid, heck, put us up in hotels, even if we're locals. Like, there's a lot of things that I feel I could generally sum it up by saying we are athletes, so pay us like the athletes that we are. So if that's right. If $660,000 is, you know, the salary per year for a football player, okay, so break that down into 12 months and whatever that math is and that result
I think you might run into a brick wall though, looking for that kind of coin, but right. I see what you're saying. Hey, right, Tasha Riley, right. If I ever have like a group that I want represented by I'm picking you. You're great. Thank you so much for being on tonight. Appreciate it.
Of course. Happy to be there.
All right. Thanks, Tasha Riley, joining us tonight. We're going to watch that and see if she prevails. Maybe she can get a little coin for her fellow dancers. You know, you just can't, you know, help think about Janet Jackson when you talk about Super Bowl and the halftime show. Remember the wardrobe malfunction heard around the world? So it happened way, way back in 2004, and it really changed everything. Now, for the first time, Janet is talking about it. She's telling all in a new two-part documentary for Lifetime and A&E. It airs on Friday and Saturday, but hey, we got a sneak peek, and we've got it for you tonight. And unlike any other celebrity-driven documentary, this one actually really delivers. She talks about her childhood. She talks about her weight, her famous brother, Michael, the allegations against him. And she also talks about Michael's death. There is also some ultra, ultra rare footage of Janet and Michael Jackson writing a song together, including the one word they could not use in the song. Also going to talk to her longtime stylist and friend, Wayne Scott Lucas. He designed that infamous outfit that caused such an uproar during the Super Bowl halftime show almost 2 decades ago. Going to ask him about that so-called wardrobe malfunction and whether it was actually a malfunction at all. You do not want to miss it. It is all coming next. Welcome back to Banfield. There is a brand new documentary about Janet Jackson premiering tomorrow on Lifetime and A&E, and it pulls no punches. Jackson herself discusses growing up with her overbearing father, her struggles with weight, and that infamous Super Bowl moment that changed the trajectory of her career. The man who designed that infamous outfit is Jackson's longtime friend and stylist, Wayne Scott Lucas, and he joins me live now. Wayne, I have been dying to talk to you, like for 20 years, so I'm so excited you're here tonight.
Really?
Thank
that
you.
Long?
Well, it's been almost that long since that thing happened at Super Bowl. So, yeah, it's been a long time. I've been wanting to ask so many questions. The first thing I want to ask you about, though, is, like, I didn't know that you'd spent, like, 30 years working with Janet Jackson. That's like a lifetime, you know, 3 decades together. What is the most surprising thing, do you think, the world is about to learn about Janet?
I think you're going to learn. I know you're going to learn that the best parts of Janet are the secret parts. The best parts of Janet are the parts that I know, the human parts. The best parts of Janet are the hidden parts. And in this documentary, she really shows you the personal stuff. She shows you the emotion. She shows you her sadness and her happiness. And those really are the most real parts that people don't ever really see. Fans think they see it. They never see it. They're going to see it this weekend.
And the Jacksons were so private, you know. I mean, they were on display just all the time. So they were as private as they could be when they could be. But Janet's becoming very transparent in this documentary, talking about a running theme in her life. And it seems to be abuse, either her father or the men that she loved. You know, and that's pretty sad. Tell me a little bit about what she says about the men in her world.
Ashley, I feel it's heartbreaking because she left her father because of control. She had to get away from her father. She went right to a man, DeBarge, who had control and then did huge amounts of drugs. She got away from him. She went to this wonderful creative guy, Rene, who controlled her life and then went off the deep end with allegedly drugs. Great guy, great talent, still working. And then she went to the next guy and there was drugs and there was abuse and control. And I just wish my friend would choose better. I think Renee was the most special relationship out of all of them because he really helped change her career. But other than that, it's been abuse and control, abuse and control, abuse and control. And many of us, you know, many people watching have suffered like this themselves. And if you can succeed, even without money, you can get out of these bad relationships. You can get out of these bad things. You don't have to stay in them. And I think Janet has finally learned that. I mean, I really, it breaks my heart because with a celebrity, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt. With a celebrity, you have to allow them to do what they want because you're working with them. But as her friend, you have to say on the side, that didn't feel good. And this doesn't feel good. And you're much better than this, you know?
So it's such a fascinating, you know, dynamic to see someone so successful and so powerful. I mean, she, you know, she runs an industry. The Janet Jackson brand is no small feat, you know. It's shocking to see that she allies herself with men that just, you know, sequentially, you know, control her. It's kind of surprising. What about the last one, Wasim Almana, the guy from Qatar? Mm-hmm. There's so many rumors about that marriage, having a baby at 50 and then divorcing, and then the rumor that she got $500 million in the divorce. Is any of it true?
I heard she got $500 million if she stayed for 5 years. And I heard she stayed for 5 years and 3 months and wanted to leave. But he's very powerful where he lives. I think there was a different settlement and they're going through some divorce right now. But you know what? It's another person controlling this great woman. And she has so much power and so much greatness as a person herself. I don't know why she allows it to happen. I wasn't around during this last relationship because I wasn't comfortable. But the baby, I mean, that's the gift. This kid is amazing. And she's an amazing mother, and nobody has seen that yet because she's kept that really private. I mean, it's a pleasure to see Janet doing a bottle. She folds the clothes. She does the diapers. She packs for the kid on trips. She doesn't make a nanny do it. Sometimes the nanny's not even there. And I love that part of my friend. So that's been the best part of that relationship, right?
Did she talk a lot about not having a child in her life in the years leading up to turning 50?
Yeah, Janet didn't have the secret baby that they all talk about because I was around for years and Rebe didn't raise the secret baby and there wasn't a secret baby. But, you know, Janet's career was her child and then Janet had to heal. You know, she did a lot of years of healing. And in this last relationship, I feel that she healed out of that relationship and the baby was the gift. Because of all the years, we didn't talk about her having kids. We talked about her loving her nieces and nephews. She's got a lot of them. We talked about her loving my nieces and nephews. There's a lot of magic there and she has a lot to give to a kid. So there's going to be a big change in her life. And there has been a big change. She didn't need to do this. I keep saying, why did you do this? The baby is the gift. Like, just chill. She's like, no, Lucas, I have to tell my story. So, you know, I support her in whatever she does because she's been a good friend.
One quick question
if
about
that makes sense.
Her weight.
We have
a
delay, so I don't want to pause on you, but I get the delay.
No worries. One quick question, and I want to get to break, but not before I ask you about her weight. So much has been rumored about Janet struggling with her weight, and she's going to really open up in the documentary. What do you know? Because you're her stylist. If anybody knows about people like us and how much we gain or lose or struggle, it's you.
You know, sometimes Janet was 5'1" or 5'2" in a size 28 dress. I mean, the size of her body went from that to a 000 skinny. So we rolled with it all the time, but I love that. That was a good joke. Rolled with it. We rolled with it all the time. But the best part about it was that, you know, she would cry. And there were times like I dressed her for David Letterman. I told some people and, you know, she came off a 000, but she looked in the mirror and she said, I don't like my body, Lucas. And then the tears started to roll. So there was a lot of hugging and a lot of love. And there's a little bit of dysmorphia there because at her skinniest, like you couldn't get any skinnier to the point that she got actually like a flu. It was terrible during the MTV Icon. She still didn't think she was thin enough. And that at her heaviest, she was so happy because she was with Jermaine Dupri and Jermaine Dupri loved her heavy. She'd say, Lucas, he grabs my hips, he grabs my love handles, he grabs my butt and he tells me he loves me. And I thought this is great for her, but she felt like, it's a little uncomfortable, but I'm learning to love my body in every shape and size. So for 30 years, I've seen her every shape and size, I've dressed her every shape and size, and I've loved her every shape and size, if that makes sense.
That's amazing. It does. I don't want you to go anywhere. When we come back after the break.
The heart stays the same.
Go ahead.
Anybody in the audience, when you're this big or this big, it's that same magic heart that never changes. Don't forget that.
Okay, so after the break, I also want to ask you about the infamous Super Bowl incident and a little bit about her working.
Oh, I guess I'm leaving now. I'm not doing any more.
No. You can't go anywhere. When we come back after the break, more with Lucas. Don't go anywhere.
What was your opening piece? I just want to write yours down.
So I'm tired of the injustice. I'm tired of the scheme. Your lies are disgusting. So what does it mean?
Okay, wait, let me write.
When kicking me down. I got to get up.
As bad as it sounds.
The whole system. Mother's gonna love us with this song. I told you not to do this, Janet. She insisted. You tied your hands behind my back. I did not want to do a song like this.
Okay, what else did you put?
Okay, you heard the beep, right? What they were doing Michael and Janet was they were collaborating on the song Scream, which was back in 1995. And when they got to that part, the whole thing was about like going after the media, right? Because the media had gone after Michael and his allegations of sex abuse. And so this was a thing they wrote together, a song they wrote together to chronicle that. And Michael picked the F word, you know, the whole system F'd. And Janet was like, we can't say that. So they changed it to, it rhymes, but they changed it to the whole system sucked. So you can imagine what it was supposed to say. I love that moment because you rarely get to see, you know, artists of that magnitude. Yes, brother and sister, but, you know, collaborating like that. And it's hard not to think about the Super Bowl when you think about Janet Jackson, right? Because of that whole, the wardrobe malfunction, the thing that, you know, showed and everyone went nuts about it. The stylist who worked on that show and designed Janet's infamous outfit is with me, Wayne Scott Lucas. So, okay, Wayne, you know, it's almost 20 years and we still don't know the answer. Was this an accident?
No, I want to say the Michael Jackson
word. Was it a malfunction?
I want to say the word.
Was it? You can't say the word.
Can I
you
say
just
the
have
word?
To tell me what the true story was behind the fabric and the wardrobe malfunction and the whole thing. What was the real story?
Well, the real story is it was the most functioning wardrobe I've ever done. You know, I get paid a lot of money for years and years to be a stylist, and I get hired. I'm a work for hire. I do my job. I make things succeed. I'm going to let Janet tell her story about the wardrobe malfunction. I don't know what she's going to speak about, but I call it the most functioning wardrobe in history. And I did what I was supposed to do. I did my job. I do think that MTV and the producers were supposed to cut to the lights sooner. It was supposed to go black and then have fireworks. There's a whole mess around this that I haven't brought up yet. And I have a book coming out. I have an NFT coming out about this. But there's too many secrets about it of people responsible that you can't place the blame anywhere. I did what I was hired to do. I still love the outfit to this day. It's hidden away in a vault somewhere. You can't even find it. But you know what? It was the most functioning wardrobe in history. And I'm going to leave Janet to tell her story. I heard Justin's coming back on the show Sunday night, and that's why they're not showing that clip to any news things. That's a huge moment to have Justin and Janet back. And Jermaine Dupri, Janet's ex-boyfriend, is going to be producing Justin's new songs. What's going on in the world? You got to help
me with
this
stuff. So, Wayne, this was no mistake. What you're saying is it was no mistake.
I'm saying from my end, there was no mistakes. I don't make mistakes as a stylist. I've never made a mistake. And I worked with Janet for 6 years after the Super Bowl. So if I had done something wrong, wouldn't I have been fired? You know, if I had
Did
ruined a career or I had ruined something.
Did the producers plan for full frontal nudity like that?
I wouldn't say the producers did it, but I would say Miley Cyrus just had a wardrobe malfunction and they immediately cut away to the band and they cut away to backstage and they took the camera off Miley. Janet had a wardrobe malfunction and they kept the camera on Janet the whole time. They didn't cut away. They could have cut away. And there was a 5-second delay at the Super Bowl in the NFL. That's a lie. And you always shoot the Super Bowl halftime show twice.
Wow.
So they had two
just in
films.
Case.
So
that they could
just in case the satellite goes down.
It.
So when
you're gonna have
the breast
to come back,
out,
I have so many more questions for you.
To,
wow. But I, you know what? I've got Tinkerbell.
I don't know why no one's telling
too,
the truth about it. I mean, what's the big deal at this point? It was a terrible deal afterward. The fallout really ruined a lot of our
Will
careers.
You come back?
I mean, we suffered.
Will you come back to have a longer conversation with me about it?
Let's see what Janet says tomorrow night. Sunday night. Okay. If Janet Saturday night doesn't tell the complete truth, I'm back here. And I'll tell you all.
Okay, well, I'm going to call you anyway. I'm going to call you anyway. Wayne Scott Lucas, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
God bless the police. God bless the police officers.
Amen.
In New York and the other state.
Agreed.
Yeah. God bless their families right now. That's more important than any of this. So God bless you all out there. We love you.
Thank you. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. And coming up, this is something. It turns out man's best friend can be man's best ATM. How pets are generating millions for their owners and how those owners are keeping Fido alive for decades. We're going to show you their secrets next. So face it, it is a struggle, a habit that is hard to kick. Those heartwarming hours that you spend on Instagram with the cutest pets in the world. It started with Grumpy Cat and it progressed to Tika the Iggy.
I had so many cute outfits planned for this year that I couldn't wear. So I just wanted to show you. See this? I love it. I couldn't wear it. Love it. Couldn't wear it.
So from there, it was Jif the Pomeranian that stole your heart. And by the time Doug the Pug, Nala the Cat, and Manny the Frenchie rolled around, you were downright hooked. But take heed, you're not the only one. 23 million of us are in their grip. And that's just from 7 accounts. And those accounts are raking in bank. So much so that the pet influencers are now cloning their pets to keep the love flowing and the cash rolling in. Sam Carroll runs the Instagram page Tinkerbell the Dog, which has 500,000 followers. Tinkerbell and Belle are Papatees, a blend of Papillon Maltese. Sam is dipping her toe in the water to clone Tinkerbell. And Melaine Rodriguez is the client service manager for Viagen. Viagen Pets, that's the company that has mastered the art of cloning pets, dogs, cats and horses only. They all join me live. I'm so excited to talk to you. First of all, oh my gosh, Sam, the cutie patooties with you. I'm so astounded at how successful they are, but they are cute as buttons. Are you going to go through with it? I know you've got the DNA going, but are you going to go all the way and clone the puppies?
I don't know at this point. I'm happy that I have this wonderful partnership and the opportunity for Tinkerbell's DNA to be preserved. As far as moving forward, eventually, maybe, but honestly, I don't know. But I also want everyone to know that as of now, she is not cloned, but she does have her DNA there for the opportunity to go forward.
So that leads me to the question, Melaine, I think you've got a cloned cat actually behind you named Benji. How many people are doing this and what does it cost to do it?
So it's still a small field. Cloning is very expensive. It's $50,000 to clone a dog and $35,000 to clone a cat. So it's not something that everyone is doing. What we do offer is what we've done for Tinkerbell is saving the DNA for potential cloning down the road. And that's as little as $1,600. So that gives you the option to clone one day if you want to. You don't have to, but that DNA is saved for when that time comes if you decide you do want to move forward with cloning. But it's a growing field. We're cloning more and more pets every year.
It's an amazing. Oh, I just looked to the left of the screen and they're just so cute. I can't even breathe. I can't thank you enough, Sam and Tinkerbell and Belle and Melaine. Do appreciate it. And I want to have you guys back if you make some advances in your decision making. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. She won 39 Jeopardy shows and then something tripped her up. What question do you think it was that tripped her up? Here it is. Do you know the answer to it? The only nation in the world whose name in English ends with an H and is also one of the 10 most populous? The question slash answer is next. And the answer is Bangladesh. Thanks for watching, everyone. See you tomorrow.